Hello, and welcome to Color Me Healthy, a production of the Community Health Center of Buffalo. Color Me Healthy focuses on wellness for communities of color and how we can all develop a better quality of life. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by Community Health Center employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the Community Health Center or any of its officials. This program is meant to be used for general informational purposes only. While this program provides information on such topics as health and wellness, the subject matter discussed is not intended to be a substitute for seeking care and service from a health professional. In all instances, even where a guest is a licensed physician, listeners should not view the opinions and perspectives expressed on the program as medical advice. Listeners are also encouraged to pay attention to the credentials and professional qualifications of the program's guests. In instances where a guest is not a licensed medical professional, listeners should note that the guest is not legally authorized to practice medicine in any setting. Listeners are always encouraged to consult with their own personal health care professional.
Hello and welcome to Color Me Healthy. I'm your host, Carl Shallowhorn. We have a special episode of Color Me Healthy today. With us, we have Dr. Kenyani Davis, who is our internal medicine physician, one of the physicians here at the Community Health Center of Buffalo. She works at our Cheektowaga site and also serves here at the Buffalo site. And today we're going to be talking about COVID-19, coronavirus, a lot of the things that are being said in the community about it. And we're going to kind of go into what it is and some of the facts that people need to know in order to help us understand better what we're dealing with right now in this time and how we can hopefully take better care of ourselves. Dr. Davis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So we really appreciate you taking your time out of your very busy schedule, because I know you are all over the place trying to take care of our patients.
Yes.
Which you already do a great job of.
Thank you.
Now you're really even more so. So thank you again. We appreciate you coming in today. So I'm going to just jump right into things and ask you the question. So what is coronavirus? What is COVID-19?
That's a great question. So the first thing I want to point out with coronavirus is that it's not a new class of viruses. What is new about it is the subtype as well as who's getting it. So coronavirus, if you think about it as that's the last name of the virus, right? And so there's two other ones that are coronavirus. I don't know if you remember back in the days, there was something called SARS.
Yes.
That was a coronavirus. And there was another thing called MERS, which was Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. That was also coronavirus. What's new, why we call it a novel coronavirus, is because now we call this COVID-19, which means coronavirus 2019, which was dubbed in February of this year after the whole incident with Wuhan.
Right.
China. So it's corona actually means it's the structure of the virus. It looks like a bunch of crowns on it. So what's new about it is that we don't have immunity to it. And so that's really what's causing this pandemic. Also of note to note that coronavirus actually lives in bats. It lives in other animals symbiotically with no issues. And so really the race is to try to figure out how that happens so that we can kind of extrapolate that information and see how we can help ourselves in this pandemic.
So, of course, a lot of people now are concerned about the transmission of this virus and how we would get it and how are exposed. So how is it transmitted? What are the ways, of course, we hear about these things. What are the ways it's transmitted?
Yeah, so this is a good question. Things are rapidly evolving in this space. It's all a race to kind of truly understand this virus because, like I said, it's new. This is the first time humans have actually seen this particular virus. So there's a race to kind of figure out how long does it live on the surface? Is it airborne versus droplet? Right now, the general consensus, and it could change tomorrow, but the general consensus is that it's droplet formation. And what droplet formation is, so when you sneeze or you cough, you actually project droplets into the air. That can travel as far as 6 feet, hence the reason why they say that you should be 6 feet away from somebody, hence social distancing.
Which is what you and I are doing right now.
Absolutely, we are.
Yes.
We are.
Yes. So obviously people are concerned about that. And so we know also there are special populations. And of course, this is interesting too, Dr. Davis, that, you know, I've been watching the news reports and getting the updates, and they're saying that, you know, many people, you know, are certainly at high risk, but doesn't mean that no one is at risk. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. Starting with the vulnerable population, as it pertains to this particular disease, happens to be the elderly. So we know 65 and over. Also people who have comorbid conditions. And so what's comorbid conditions? So these are people with chronic health issues that are not necessarily as controlled. These are your diabetic patients and really your, this is a lower respiratory tract disease. So we're really, really, really nervous about people who have asthma and COPD and smokers. So I have to be a physician. So any smokers out there, now is the time to stop.
Yes.
Stop smoking. But vulnerable populations, especially the elderly, hence the reason why you see a lot of the nursing homes limiting visitors and even shutting down, because they don't have the immune response to be able to fight a disease such as this.
That's very interesting. So, but also I think it's to be noted, like I said, that you're hearing these reports of people that are younger that yes. are contracting this disease. So what about them?
Yeah. So you know what? You see spring break is now. So you see these people with this laissez-faire attitude and they're Miami and they're not practicing social distancing by any means. I think when we're young, we feel invincible. But the truth is that when you have a novel virus such as this, you don't know how it's going to react in you. As we speak right now, I have a 37-year-old patient who's in the ICU currently with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. I have another patient that my nurse just told me who's 42, and she's actually in the ICU right now. So these are very different than what we're seeing from Italy, where people are 65 and over.
Right.
So at this particular point, what we know here in the US is that people who are younger, per se, anywhere between 30 to 65, are actually requiring hospitalizations, which is a little different than what we're seeing in the rest of the world.
That's very interesting. So what do we do to keep ourselves safe? Of course, we know about washing our hands, social distancing. Tell us more about that.
So social distancing is so, so important. I've heard a lot of stuff over the past several days from other physicians, infectious disease, you know, physicians. One of the infectious disease physicians in University of Chicago said it best. She stated, "It's hard to feel like you're saving the world by sitting on your couch watching Netflix." Mm. And I thought that was brilliant, because that really is what you're doing, is you are saving the world. And part of that with social distancing is, if we can contain the virus, meaning contain the spread, that is the biggest thing that we have right now. There's no vaccines. There's no medications. All we have is containment. Mm. And the way to contain it is we have to decrease any transmission of this virus. That's the only way we can control it.
Thank you. That's really good to know. So, of course, obviously, you know, this is a whole new world.
Yeah.
Whole new world, whole new, something that I don't think any of us ever could have imagined.
Never.
In our lifetime.
Ever.
You know, I remember in school, high school, whatever, you know, history books.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the early 1900s, you hear about these pandemics.
Yes, the plague and
right,
Spanish
right,
flu,
right, right, right,
wiping
right, right.
whole populations
right, right,
out.
Right.
Right.
We are living in this
we
right now.
We are in it right now. I mean, and this is probably me being a physician and kind of the sick, twisted, you know, view we have. This is actually very, very interesting times, because God willing, we'll never live through another pandemic
right.
like this again. It's very serious. We haven't had a pandemic for 100 years. This is uncharted territory. It's one of those things where you may think you're ready until it hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is kind of where we're at. And this will go down in history books. And I think everybody will know exactly where they were and how they felt during this time. This will be in your history books.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I remember, of course, we all remember 9/11, and mm-hmm. and some people are old enough to remember, mind you, I was a wee little lad, but you know, Martin Luther King when he was killed.
Absolutely.
Or I was very, very young. I was only like an infant when JFK,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I mean, people remember these momental times
right.
in our history. This is going to go down as one of the
absolutely.
You know, at least this century, of course, we're early in the century, but
absolutely.
Still, it's going to be incredible. And of course, I think, you know, the whole idea of social distancing, as you said, is critical. Tell us a little bit more about that, like how we can practice that better.
Yeah, so social distancing truly is, I think this is really a great time to kind of slow down in your life. And as Americans, we tend to the hustle and bustle all the time, this is where we slow down and prioritize what's important. So I have to say, so, you know, I take myself, for example, I am probably the most type A personality that you'll ever meet and just get it done. And I was actually cleaning up in the house. I was trying to get my daughter's room together. And it was about 11:30 last night. And I was like, gosh, I'm gonna run to Walmart because I need to get more hangers. If we were not on lockdown, I probably would have went to Walmart to get more hangers. Now, my husband would have told me that that was not essential. That wasn't something I was supposed to do. But in my mind, I was really supposed to do that. So I think that this is the time when we start talking about social distancing. What is important? So what is important? The first thing that's important is that, one, we protect the vulnerable population. We protect the people who can't protect themselves, which we do that by staying in our house, right? And I have a 16-year-old son who is out of school, whose basketball season is done, who is not happy about that either. And sometimes it's hard to kind of communicate to kids, well, why are you doing that? You know, I have a daughter whose birthday is next week, and she's like, Mommy, the virus stopped my birthday. Well, honey, no, we just have to reimagine and re-envision what that looks like. So this is a great time to get your spring cleaning done. This is a great time to figure out, how are you going to exercise? How are you going to eat healthy? How are you going to do better? What preventative steps are you going to take that so that, God forbid, we're in a pandemic again, that you're not the vulnerable population?
Right. So I just want to remind our listeners, once again, we're here with Dr. Kenyani Davis, who is one of our internal medicine physicians here at the Community Health Center Buffalo. And so we're talking about COVID-19, coronavirus, and what we can do and how we can prevent the spread of this illness. So speaking about the Community Health Center of Buffalo and all of our four sites, what are we doing here to help people with preventing and dealing with these situations we're in right now?
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about that. I am so proud of the Community Health Center of Buffalo right now and how quick we were able to respond to this pandemic, and not only how quick we were able to respond, but how quick we were able to respond to our patients while keeping our staff safe. You know, I've been a part of a lot of different organizations, and I have to say that bar none, Community Health Centers of Buffalo did a wonderful job. So what we are doing is we are trying to lessen the impact within the community. What we do know about this virus is that 80% of the virus is going to be mild to moderate cases. So we hear a lot about the need of ventilators and respirators. That's 20% of the cases. Majority of these cases are out in the community and the public. And here at Community Health Centers of Buffalo, we've created a separate COVID-19 line that's manned by a nurse triage enroller for insurance, God forbid if you don't have any insurance, as well as a call center person. And then what happens is it gets triaged and it's placed with one of our providers, one of our PAs or one of our physicians, who can actually begin to help not only our patients, but other patients who have no PCP or no insurance. So we're really stepping up and taking care of people who thought that they didn't need a doctor until they needed a doctor.
Now, I want to ask you a question too about this new idea. You know, forgive me for using this term, but a novel idea of telehealth.
Yeah.
Because everybody's talking about telehealth now.
Right.
So tell us about telehealth, what that is.
So thank you. So there's two ways to kind of do telehealth. There's a telephonic conversation where, you know, you call the doctor and we do this based off of the phone. And then there's a telemedicine visit where you can actually pretty much do like a FaceTime with the physician. That is so important in social distancing right now without compromising the quality of care. It gives us the opportunity to still be able to provide that care to patients without bringing them into the brick and mortar and potentially contaminating other people. It's also, even in my personal experience with doing telehealth, it's allowed me to be able to keep some people who aren't as symptomatic out of the hospital, which is super important during this time because we do not want to overwhelm our healthcare system that's already strained.
Right. And I think, of course, we've heard about certainly elective surgeries are being postponed, canceled, but postponed.
Postponed, yeah.
You know, it's an interesting story here is I'm dealing with some issues myself. Uh-huh. You know, I have some back issues. And I had to go see an orthopedic doctor last week. Well, already I'm thinking that may not have happened this week because of you know, some of these restrictions. So now what do we do about folks that were facing these things that are saying like, well, I need this surgery. I need this. What do we do to these folks?
This is a great question. I think, you know, it's not a great answer, but I ask those people to be patient, right? We're all dealing with something that we're not prepared for. You know, you can do as many drills as you want, but until it goes live, you have no idea. So I asked people who have, you know, pre-existing conditions or people who had any surgeries that were scheduled in the future, just be patient. I think this is now the time where if there's anything that we can do conservatively, give it a chance, give it a try. I think as Americans, sometimes we run to surgery a lot of times as a quick fix. Keep in mind there are other modalities that we can do. This is a great opportunity, like I said, to realign and re-envision what health means to us and how we treat it.
Yeah, I think, you know, in many ways, we're in the midst of a bunch of revolutions. And healthcare is certainly on the forefront.
Absolutely.
We're looking at healthcare. I mean, I'm also in the education field.
Yeah.
And everything's online now. Like, we're like, well, you can
Isn't that crazy?
Teach online.
That's right? Craziness.
Yeah.
My husband's working on his MBA, and all of a sudden his classes were halted, and it was like, okay, here's your online course. And I know he was like, hold on, online.
I didn't sign up for this.
Like, I don't know if I'm that student.
Exactly.
So, I mean, hats off to anybody who's in school now who is struggling to deal with online. God bless you guys.
So I want to pivot a little bit
on that
same note, similar note. So you talk about being in school and so forth. Mm-hmm. We know that many of our listeners are out there are dealing with young children. They're at home. How do we, like you said, you talked about your own kids. I mean, how do we keep them healthy? How do we get this message across about what this is? How do you explain this to a young child?
You know, it's hard. And I have to say, as a mother, trying to figure out a way to kind of communicate that to different age levels has been pretty difficult. But I have to give hats off to the school system, because I can tell you my six-year-old was really well prepared. I had no idea she even knew about the virus, right? But I think really being able to have an open dialogue with your children and be able to communicate it in a way that they understand is super important, because they also need to know that the power of what they're doing by being out of school, it may hurt because they're not with their friends, but that they're doing something really good. So now is the time to include them in those conversations.
So make them a part of the solution.
Absolutely.
Make them the heroes.
I love it. Absolutely.
Make them the heroes.
Make them the heroes of it.
You know, it's almost like saying, hey, you know what? If you do this, think about what you could tell your kids someday, how you helped.
Absolutely. And you know what? And what we tell my daughter is that she's helping her nan.
Yeah,
you know, she's helping her nanny.
I love it.
And so it gives her purpose to wake up every day.
I love it. So now, of course, we talked a lot about vulnerable populations. We talked a little bit about children. What about ourselves as adults? Right? What do we need to do?
As adults, I think the first thing is, as Americans, we are not the healthiest people. Right. So I think the first thing that we need to do is shine light on prevention. So doing the things that we can do to kind of prevent disease, meaning changing our diets, incorporating exercise, self-care, those things. The other thing to kind of keep in mind also is that the symptoms of coronavirus, because one of the things as an outpatient physician that I've seen, it's the hysteria and the pandemonium of like, oh my God, I sneezed. Do I have the disease?
Right.
Right. So I want to kind of take the time out to kind of go over what those symptoms are.
Thank you.
So 99% of the cases. And so what we have is we have case reports from Wuhan as well as from other places. 99% of the people who were positive for coronavirus had a fever. 70% presented with fatigue. 59% had a dry cough, and 31% had difficulty breathing. Other things like myalgias, which is muscle pain and stuff like that, was on there as well. But the three main focus areas is a fever, cough, and shortness of breath, because like I said before, this is a lower respiratory tract disease. So I think as adults to understand that we are entering into allergy season, so there could be other things. Mm. We are still in flu season. And at the end of the day, we still have more flu cases than we do COVID-19 cases. But as adults, to kind of keep that in mind, that we don't need to rush to the emergency room. But I really, really encourage you to call your PCP, call in here if you don't have a PCP or insurance, but to get guidance and direction. But those are the three symptoms that you should really,
worry about. That's really good to know. And so, of course, what if we feel we've been exposed? Of course, we know that now. I heard our county executive just yesterday in his daily briefing. He was talking about, I'll just give the little story here. He was talking about, he looked out his window. He saw a group of 15 runners together. And he's saying, no, not a good idea. You know, you're breathing, you're sweating, you're spitting, whatever.
Right.
Now imagine, I'm just making this up. This is not true, but I'm making this up. Imagine if one of those rudders had been determined to be positive. What would those individuals do, or what would an individual do if they feel they've been exposed? Like, what are the next steps?
Right. So that's a good question. So that scenario is the reason why I haven't slept in about 7 days. Because keep in mind that one infected person can actually knock down 3 to 5 people, right? So that, with that said, so I think it's a good time to talk about the incubation period. So like, let's say you have no symptoms. So a scenario like that, it's about 14 days. So let's say you're out there running with somebody. About 14 days later is when you can start to feel symptoms. Majority of these cases, we know that it's about 3 to 4 days after an initial exposure is when they start to feel symptoms. So the guidelines in regards to healthcare workers, I will say, so like, let's say any of those were healthcare workers that were in there. I would say the same thing for the general population. You should monitor your temperature twice a day. Fever, as defined in this COVID-19 outbreak, is 100.4 degrees, which is a little different than what we normally put the fever target at, but 100.4 degrees is what's considered a fever. We've also loosened the guidelines that even if you feel feverish and you didn't document your temperature. So in that case, I would say watch your symptoms, check your fever twice a day.
Right. Now, I realize a lot of people think, you know, this could be going on for a while. I mean, of course, you listen to the news reports, and of course, the media is you know, feel like, you know, it's stirring up a lot of things, a lot of anxiety.
Yes.
So this could be going on for a while.
This can be going on for a while.
What do we do about that? What do we do?
I
know that's $1 million question.
I know. What do we do? You know, we stay calm and don't panic. I think the first thing is we stop buying up all the toilet paper in the stores. So let's start there, because this is a respiratory disease, not a dysentery disease.
Right.
But I think this is where we all have to take ownership, right? We all have to do our part. And I think this is really, if this sustains and goes on for a really long time, we have to ask ourselves, what can we do?
Right.
And what we can do is practice safe hygiene and social distancing until we can come up with either a vaccine or we can come up with medications. That's the only way. This is a marathon. This isn't a sprint, you know, and I'm a former track athlete and I'm a sprinter. So I think everything's a sprint, but I can tell you right now, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And that's the mindset that we have to have.
So I guess one of my last questions is, we know what we're facing, I think. You know, we know this is bigger than anything we've ever could have dreamt of and believed of. Where do we go? I mean, you know, what do you see coming of this? I guess if you had a crystal ball, and you could look, say, a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, what do you think this is going to do? Let's say in healthcare, your arena, what's this going to do for healthcare?
I think it's going to be monumental in healthcare. I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think it's shed light on a few things. It shed light that our healthcare system cannot continue to go on the way it's been going on. I think it also shed light that we are poorly underfunding public health as well as our outpatient systems. I think that also, in the grand scheme of things, when we think about how big this is, right? If I can right here, New York State alone, right? As of March 24th, now keep in mind these numbers change rapidly. There's about 380,000 COVID-19 cases globally. But here in New York State, we have 12,305 in New York City, 2,442 in Nassau. Altogether, when we take all the counties in New York State, we have 20,875 cases. That's as of March 24th. Now, I just got to say, one infected person can knock out three to five people. Right now, New York State has 5% of all the coronavirus cases globally.
Wow.
So when you think about that massive number, and you think about the shortage of supplies, you know, as far our maintenance guy, God bless him, just dropped off N95 masks to our staff.
Oh, wow.
The lack of supplies and preparation, and I think that's really kind of what the question is. No healthcare provider is saying, I don't want to run full force into this tsunami. They're just saying, please allow me to do it safely.
Right. And I have to say, you know, take a pause and thank you.
Ah, thank you.
And thank all of our incredible healthcare workers here at the Community Health Center.
Absolutely.
And throughout the world.
Right.
Not just here in the country or the state or whatever, throughout the world, who are on the front lines, literally putting themselves at risk every day, every minute, every hour to face this. And all we can hope and pray for is that our legislators, our leaders, provide you all with the resources to do your job safely.
Right.
Because if we can't have, you know, if you can't do your job, then what happens?
Right. Right.
So, and I think this is a message to the public.
Absolutely.
That we need to, and I'm getting on my soapbox
here. I love it.
But we need to advocate. We need to vote. We need to let our legislators know this is what we want.
Absolutely.
Because in the end, we are the ones who you know, ultimately can move the needle.
This is true. That is so true. Voting is so important, especially in the population that we serve. You know, a lot of times we sit back and we say, oh, it doesn't affect us. Here, right now, is a time where it affects you, right? And I think that especially as, and I don't mean to go to my soapbox either, but as we start to decrease funding to health centers and federally qualified health centers, somebody has to be a safety net. Somebody has to take ownership of people, regardless if they want help, need help. Somebody has to be here and say, I'll take you in regardless of if you can pay. And I think that it's so important during, you know, the upcoming elections that we all vote, because our structure is here to do that. And it, a good part of that is based off of how, you know, people in politics feel.
Right.
And we have to ask ourselves as people, is health a human right? Or is this a business? What is it?
Mm.
Right? And so we got to ask ourselves that. Now's a great time while we're doing social distancing to figure that out, right?
I absolutely believe that. So I guess, Dr. Davis, I'll just ask, anything else you want to add or tell our audience and wrapping things up?
No, thank you so much for having me on here. And thank you for everybody listening. And we're here to help if anybody has any issues or are looking for a PCP or looking for some type of guidance during this time.
So I just want to remind our listeners, we are here from the Community Health Center of Buffalo. If you are in the Buffalo metropolitan area, you can reach the Community Health Center at 716-986-9199. As Dr. Davis mentioned, if you don't have health insurance, if you don't have a primary care provider, if you need those services, please call us. We can help you. If you are outside of the area, certainly utilize your local resources and practice those practices, the protocols you've been hearing about on the news and in the media. But also, let's stay hopeful.
Right.
I think we need to keep the hope and let us know that, you know, we can get through this. We can get through this together if we all do our part, if we all be the heroes. All of us, we can be heroes here and be the ones to move us forward and get us through this time that is very difficult for a lot of people, but we can make it. We can do it. So I want to remind our listeners once again to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. We have all of our podcasts also on Podbean, which is our platform we broadcast on. We want to thank you for joining us today on this very important topic, this very important version and episode of Color Me Healthy. I'm your host, Carl Schallhorn. Until next time, be well.